Looking to learn some real mixed martial arts? Well, look no further, as I encourage you to head over to Agogi Combatives. That is going to be the premier destination to learn mixed martial arts here in Tennessee, as well as North Georgia, and really all over these parts, as at Agogi, you're going to learn from the best coaches and athletes in the region. And it's not just limited to jiu-jitsu, striking, wrestling. Everything MMA is going to be happening at Agogi, from Krav Maga, youth wrestling, boxing, it's all there. It is the one-stop shop here if you truly want to take your MMA to the next level. If you want to see the full suite of classes and high-level instructors, then head over to agogicombatives.com. One more time, that is agogicombatives.com.
Now you're all in big, big trouble.
Suspect.
This is how I win.
All right, we are back here on the Watch It podcast for a wonderful Friday. Great way to cap off, honestly, what was an extremely busy week. I feel like not only for me, but for a lot of other people I know, it's that week before Thanksgiving, which can be busy in tons of different ways. You know, you're getting your travel plans ready, getting the menu for your Thanksgiving festivities all ready to go. And it's always that week before, I don't know, in my experience, the week before Thanksgiving is always when work gets a little crazy, but then it kind of dies off. Really, until the end of the year. So you're round and third and heading home for the year. Got the Thanksgiving food. My birthday's coming up, so that's going to be fun. Going to do some festivities there. But last Saturday, we had some incredible festivities. I wanted to cover this earlier in the week in the podcast. Just didn't have time to come in. But now it is time to break down what was really one of the wildest cards in recent memory, which was UFC 281, Adesanya versus Pereira. I mean, this card, all the way from the early prelims until the final seconds, was more than worth the asking price, in my opinion. This was one of the best cards of the year. And it featured several fighters who have been in the top spot for fight of the year, like Michael Chandler, Dustin Poirier, Israel Adesanya, Dan Hooker even, Frankie Edgar, Chris Gutierrez. So many fighters on this card. So let's just go start with Dan Hooker and Claudio Puelles, which I'm not going to lie. You know, I mentioned how great this card was. If you just watched this fight, you would be extremely disappointed. I'm not lying when I say that this was probably one of the worst fights that I have ever seen in my entire life. It was terrible. It was absolutely awful. And that's not on Dan Hooker. Dan Hooker was trying to make the fight interesting. He was doing his best. But Puelles wanted the fight on the ground so bad. I don't know what he was trying to do. He wasn't going for takedowns. I mean, he was doing some attempts. He was really locked in on trying to get something with the leg. I don't know what kind of submission he was looking for. I know that there's the coveted leg bar, but it didn't really look like he was going for that. Nothing was there for him, but he just kept just going for these takedowns and these submission attempts. That was never going to happen. And Dan Hooker, you look at him during this fight, he couldn't help but laugh at everything that was going on. Claudio Puelles, it's like he was injured or something. He would keep constantly go to his back, kind of like the way Charles Oliveira does, but in a little less of a subtle and defensive or offensive way in the case of Charles Oliveira. And it was more just like, what the hell are you doing kind of situation. Why don't you pick yourself up? Like, I don't understand. It was called off by TKO, shockingly. I just thought it was just a stoppage, but looking here, it was a TKO. Dan Hooker, he finally gets back into the win column, which is great because Dan Hooker is a guy who I've liked for a very long time, and he's a guy who I'm going to continue to like for even longer than that. And moving on, speaking of guys that I liked a lot, we had Frankie Edgar come out. It was coveted as his last big fight, his last big performance. I call it from the Billabong era, the long shorts. They almost look like board shorts, and he goes against Chris Gutierrez. As a guy who I'm also a big fan of, he's got that dog in him. They came out, man. Frankie Edgar's entrance coming into this was one fit for a legend like Frankie Edgar. If you just watch that introduction, man, you would think there's no way he's losing this fight. But 2 minutes and 1 second in, Chris Gutierrez, man, with a right hook, just bang, Frankie Edgar goes down, and that is how his career ends. Which is very upsetting, honestly. It's like, you know, Chris Gutierrez, he got the big knockout, which, of course, is amazing for him. But it's like right after he did it, there was like this level of regret. He's like, holy shit, I just knocked out Frankie Edgar in brutal fashion in his last fight ever. And it was at Madison Square Garden, the biggest venue in the entire sport. I just did that to him. Clean right hook or left hook. Incredible. Absolutely incredible. And for Frankie Edgar, man, it was a heartbreaking scene. People surrounding him and Rogan and DC and John Anik, they just kept going like, I just can't believe this is how the legend goes out. That's how it happened, man. Frankie Edgar, that's how he goes out. It's a heartbreaking sport, and it really does, this result puts it on full display. But that heartbreak quickly was quelled when we got to Dustin Poirier and Michael Chandler, which this, oh my God, Michael Chandler, he does it again with an absolutely incredible fight at Madison Square Garden, putting on an absolute show for everybody in attendance and watching around the world, as Bruce Buffer says. Oh my goodness, I knew this fight was going to be good. Both Michael Chandler and Dustin Poirier talked about it last week on the podcast, but this is not what I was expecting at all. From everything you heard from Mike prior to the fight, it sounded like he was going to be going for more of a wrestling match, which would be good, as historically, that's not really Poirier's strong suit. Is it wrestlers or jiu-jitsu guys? But Michael Chandler comes out swinging immediately, and he gets Dustin in some trouble early on with some great punches, but then the tides totally turn where, in the broadcast, Rogan says that this was a good idea, that Mike, he had Dustin against the cage, throwing hellacious levels of punches, absolutely hellacious, almost looked like he was going to knock Dustin out or at least get a stoppage, and then he takes him to the ground right after a huge volley of punches, just takes him right down, and like I said, the whole broadcast booth was like, that's a great choice by Michael Chandler. Was it? Because when you go back and rewatch this fight, Mike probably could have knocked him out right then and there. Right there. I don't know what he was doing, extending the fight, taking him to the ground, because it absolutely backfired. As near the end of the first round, Dustin Poirier had totally flipped the script. And he damn near knocked Michael Chandler out. He clearly broke his nose, opened up a massive gash on his face, blood going everywhere, into the first bell. And it just was a questionable decision on the part of Michael Chandler. But a really great bounce back for Dustin Poirier. I would still give the round to Poirier after the first. And then the second round, Mike, he takes it to the ground a little bit more. And this is where the controversy behind this fight starts to build up a little bit, as there was some accusations on the part of Dustin Poirier that Mike Chandler playing a little dirty. And you go back and you watch the replay, there's pretty evident fish hooking and strikes to the back of the head. The fish hooking was fascinating, to say the least, because it was quite blatant. And the strikes to the head, that was bad too. But that one I understand a little bit more, the unintentionality behind it. You're in a cage match fighting another man. And some of the strikes, yeah, they were in the back of the head, but some of them were going to the ear. Which, you know, not a place you really want to get hit at. But the fish hooking was more of a concern for me. But I don't know if Mike goes out there and is looking for a fish hook. You know, I think it's just one of those things that unfortunately just happens. But Poirier, he holds on through the wrestling in the second round. And round three Oh, man, Dustin was not playing around. He comes out throwing heavy strikes. Mike takes him to the ground, but Dustin reverses this on him. And then Dustin Poirier, for the first time in Michael Chandler's career, Chandler gets submitted 2 minutes into round three. Absolutely incredible fight by both of those guys. Easy win one fight of the night. I don't even know what second place would have been. I guess maybe our main event fight that we'll touch on here in just a second. But Poirier, man, he looked incredible in this fight. Not only did his chin look vastly, vastly improved from some things that we saw earlier in his career, and we've seen that build and build and build through the McGregor fights, which he won handedly, both of those, and his unfortunate loss to Charles Dubronx Oliveira for the championship. But right now with this fight, man, the way that he handled Chandler and the way he handled that offense that Chandler throws, that explosiveness, Poirier, he's priming himself for a very interesting position, possibly for another lightweight title run. I would like to see it. I'm just curious what happens with Alexander Volkanovski and Islam Makhachev, because those will be two very different fights for whoever gets the lightweight title shot next. I'm assuming it's going to be Poirier. Both of these guys coming into it, top five contenders in that division. And both of them, I don't know. Poirier, to me, moves up a little bit. Mike, he was five. I don't necessarily know if I move him down. The UFC does in their eyes. He's six now, but I mean, it was an incredible fight. So I think Dustin would match up extremely well against Alexander Volkanovski. That would be an incredible boxing match and kickboxing as well. But Michael Chandler, Islam Makhachev for Dustin Poirier would have been a little bit more, will be, in my opinion, that's probably the most likely outcome, a bit more of a challenge. Islam Makhachev, very similar to Khabib Nurmagomedov, who Dustin struggled against in another lightweight title fight. We'll see what happens. I think Mike Chandler would be a better matchup for Islam Makhachev in terms of a little bit more interesting, with more belt on the line. But I think Volk, I don't know, man. I have a hard time seeing Chandler take down Volk. And I'm curious what happens next for Michael Chandler. I think it's got to be the McGregor fight. It has to be. That's perfect. That is perfect for both of them. It's definitely not going to be, Mike said this in the press conference, it's not going to be the easiest fight for Conor to come back and take, but it's definitely going to be the best. But I'm kind of the mindset now that I don't think Conor McGregor will be coming back for another fight. But hell, if he does, I think he should go against Michael Chandler. I know Michael Chandler takes the L on this fight here at Madison Square Garden, but it was an absolute war between him and Dustin Poirier. Absolutely incredible fight, man. I love both of these guys so much as fighters. Extreme amount of respect for both of them. For Poirier, I think he's next in line for that title, depending on the results of Volk and Makhachev. So, moving on to the women's strawweight title fight, we had Carla Esparza and Weili Zhang. This wasn't much of a contest here. Carla, I will say, did a little bit better than I expected. She had zero confidence coming out to the octagon. Zero. She looked nervous. I remember her in the Rose Namajunas fight. A lot more energy going inside of that. But going into this, almost looked frozen, because Weili Zhang is a remarkable fighter. She proved once again that she, to me, is the best fighter in the women's strawweight division and across all of women's MMA. I think Amanda Nunes still takes the title as the greatest for the time being, but damn, Weili Zhang, absolutely incredible, regains the women's strawweight belt. I think clearly now it's got to be a matchup with Rose Namajunas again. Hopefully Rose puts on a little bit more of an offensive performance, unlike her last fight with Carla Esparza. But we'll see what happens there. But we got to get now into our main event, the middleweight championship between Alex Pereira and Israel Adesanya. Oh my goodness, this is a fight that had so much hype behind it, just really because it's a story so easy to sell if you're the UFC. Israel Adesanya is a guy who in the UFC only lost one time to Jan Blachowicz when he tried to move up and take two belts. But he wasn't knocked out. It was a simple decision. But go back to Izzy's kickboxing days. There's a guy who beat him twice. One time knocked him out clean. And that is Alex Pereira, an absolutely incredible fighter out of Brazil. This was either his third or fourth fight in the UFC. And he's already here as the middleweight contender. And the first several rounds, really the first four rounds, all Izzy, especially the first round. Alex Pereira was saved by the bell at the end of the first as Izzy just rang him up with a nice series of punches there. Alex got lucky getting out of that round, saved by the bell. Moving on, it's a dominant classic Israel Adesanya performance. Keeping his distance, getting some solid strikes in. Izzy, though, being a little bit more aggressive than we had seen him in the past. Because he knows what Alex Pereira can do. Pereira, he seemed to have some issues with stamina. And Izzy also scored, shockingly, the first takedown of his career with Pereira. And when Pereira was on the ground, he looked absolutely lost. He was gassing himself out, trying to shift position on the ground. And then Izzy, man, he was handling him. But then round five comes. Which, if you remember, several months ago, round five for Kamaru Usman against Leon Edwards kind of went in a similar way. Dominant performance pretty much the whole fight. But then a lapse in the final round. So what happened here? Alex Pereira, he gets Izzy against the cage. Izzy had been struggling there all night, but he found himself back into this position. And Alex, man, he just lets it fly. An absolute barrage. Missile launches into Israel Adesanya, and he rocks him. First swing. Izzy goes down a little bit, pulls back up, holds it off. And then Pereira, man, he knows this is a shot. If he doesn't get the finish here, he's not going to get the title. He's not going to beat Izzy for a third time. So Pereira, he lets it fly, man, and they just keep landing on Izzy. Izzy's stunned, he's wobbling, he's falling down. And right when you think Izzy's about to get knocked out, stoppage comes into play. TKO on the books for Alex Pereira. I know a lot of people are a little bit upset about the results of this fight, saying that it was an early stoppage on the UFC's part, on the referees. Which, you can absolutely make the case. There's quite a good case to make, honestly, about that. But I'm here with a counterpoint. I think it was a good stoppage, man. Izzy was about to get knocked out. So this outcome for Pereira and Adesanya was inevitable right there. Right when he got rocked with that first punch. I mean, you look at Alex Pereira. If I did a power ranking list of people I'd want to get punched by, I think Alex Pereira has got to be near the bottom of that list. Do not want to do that. He is an absolutely massive man, and that's part of what made this fight so interesting is physically, in terms of height, Izzy, compared to the rest of the middleweight division, is way taller. I mean, you look at him go against Robert Whittaker or Marvin Vettori, there is such a significant height difference between the two that it's almost jarring. But then Alex Pereira comes in and stands next to Israel Adesanya. Not only do I believe Pereira is a little bit taller, but he looks like two Israel Adesanyas combined into one in terms of just mass. So if he was able to land that punch, which like he did, that was the end of Izzy. And that's what happened. And if you go back, I encourage people who believe this was an early stoppage. Like I said, it's a valid point if you think it was. But I encourage you to go back and watch maybe the last 5 seconds of action in that fight. Because you see this down swing, Izzy's head goes down, and man, Alex is there. Slight miss, Izzy pops back up, Alex lands again, he goes back down, that's when the stoppage happens. It was about to be an absolute bloodbath for Israel Adesanya if that wasn't stopped. But Izzy, man, he handled it like a champion's grace. Bowing to the crowd after the TKO. I think you got to run it back if they're the UFC. Only thing I can really think of is maybe you give it to Robert Whittaker. Because I think Whittaker is going to beat Vettori. And hell, if Vettori beats Whittaker, give it to Vettori. I would like to see Pereira defend against someone not named Israel Adesanya. And I would like to see Adesanya fight someone not named Alex Pereira next. I know it's kind of like Leon Edwards and Kamaru Usman, where that's the easiest fight to just run back and do. But I really would like to see what happens with Pereira and someone like Robert Whittaker, because Pereira did not handle, like I said, being on the ground very well at all. So I'd love to see him go against a wrestler, a grappler, and really test him to see what Pereira can do. Because this is a very early, early championship. Fourth fight, I believe. Fourth fight in the UFC, he's a champion. That's unprecedented. The only thing I could think like that is when Michael Chandler came in to UFC, he beat Dan Hooker, and then I believe he was immediately back into title contention with a bout against Charles Oliveira for the then-vacant belt. Which is incredible. It's incredible. Obviously, he didn't get Mike's way, but it's incredible that he got in that position so fast. And yeah, he was a Bellator champion. But Alex, man, oh my God. He's now beat Israel Adesanya three times in two different sports. The memes are hilarious. It's absolutely hilarious. And I'm curious to see what Alex Pereira can do, man. If he can develop a ground game, that is an extremely dangerous fighter. But UFC 281, that was an absolutely bonkers card. But let's look ahead a little bit. Let's look ahead to what we have coming to UFC 282. That is going to be December 9th out in Las Vegas. It's going to be a good card with Bryce Mitchell going against Ilia Topuria. As the first fight on the main card, we have Robbie Lawler. First fight back after the loss to Brian Barberena. He's going against Santiago Ponzinibbio, who's also a legendary fighter in his own right. Then we have Paddy Pimblett and Jared Gordon. Paddy Pimblett, I think he's going to dominate this. I think he's going to break through a little bit in the lightweight division. And then we have Magomed Ankalaev going against Jan Blachowicz in the light heavyweight division. Jan, I really hope he pulls this out. I'd love to see him go against Yuri or Glover, which is the next fight. The rematch between Jiří Procházka and Glover Teixeira. That's going to be interesting. And even looking further ahead, the first fight of 2023, it's going to be January 1st. We have Davison Figueiredo, Brandon Moreno, Lauren Murphy and Jessica Andrade, and then Paul Craig and Johnny Walker. I'm not sure where they're going to be on that fight. I don't think those guys are making it to the main card. It's honestly a weak card, 283 is, but that's setting up for 284. Which is going to be an absolute showstopper of a card, as that's when we're going to be getting Volkanovski and Islam Makhachev. So we will see what happens there. I do want to touch quickly on this World Cup situation, because it combines two things that I'm very interested in, the World Cup and the world of beer sponsorships. So as you may know, if you watch any kind of upper-level soccer, football, whatever you want to call it, Budweiser, the beer brand, a very popular beer brand, one of my favorite beer brands too, spent $75 million to be the official beer sponsor of the 2022 World Cup in Qatar. Now that's interesting because Qatar is a country who is very, very strict on a lot of different things. One of those is alcohol. If you look at a map, I saw this on Reddit, there's a map of places you can actually drink in Qatar, and most of them are international hotels. Places that have hotel bars, but not a whole lot of spots. You know, you go out and grab a couple beers. So it's interesting when the World Cup comes in, a sport that is very famous for how much their fans can drink, especially if they come from America, England, Germany, Denmark, France, even Italy, which I don't think Italy qualified, if I had that right, but I don't know. But hey, a lot of fans coming from all over the world, the biggest event in all of sports. And Budweiser paid $75 million, and then there was reports beginning to surface not that long ago that there might be some issues with the sale of alcohol. So, it was the first reported by the New York Times, who said that the beer tents were going to be less visible. This comes from an article at ESPN, and of course, the reporting here from the New York Times, that it reported that the beer tents would be less visible at the grounds. Which, if you're not familiar with how the World Cup works, it's kind of like the Olympics. It's a massive, I would say it's arguably bigger in terms of just monetary investment that goes inside of that than what you see for something like the Olympics. These are beautiful stadiums in Qatar, obviously, a country that has a questionable record with the construction of this, but it's a massive complex. And they said that there isn't going to be alcohol here. And then coming out of today, they say that there just flat out will not be any kind of beer, liquor, or any kind of alcohol sales occurring at all at the stadium. However, they did make it clear, FIFA made it very clear that this will not impact the sale of Bud Zero, which will remain available at all of Qatar's World Cup stadiums. Wow. I don't know how that's going to go over with the English and Danish and French, German, and American crowds who are in over there. But yeah, that is surprising, and I'm just curious what happens with, because Budweiser, they spent $75 million to get that sponsorship, man, and this comes up at the last second. The only statement so far, I'm recording this at 5 p.m. on Friday, the only statement I see so far from Budweiser is a tweet that says, well, this is awkward, but hey, we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. And the Bud Zero, big win for Bud Zero. I haven't had it, but definitely a lot of people here at the World Cup are going to be consuming some Bud Zero. We're very excited for the World Cup. Starts up next week. We will see how that goes. Hopefully, we can get a podcast. James, Connor, Jay, somebody. We got to get a World Cup show going. It's just been a hellaciously busy week. But like I said, I feel like after Thanksgiving, things slow down up until the new year. But that is going to be all the time that we have today on the Watch It podcast. Glad I was able to break down UFC 281 and what we have for our next two fights just briefly. Obviously, you know, I'm going to be doing full prediction shows for those fights right before the main event. Have some good guests coming in for that. And definitely glad I got to touch on this fun beer situation happening with the World Cup, because that is quite fascinating. We have an awesome week of football coming up ahead of us on ESPN 95.3 and everywhere. To be sure to check out the great shows on ESPN 95.3, The Word with G, Press Row, and the High School Football Review and Preview Show. A lot of teams in our area still in contention, so we will see what happens there. But thank you guys so much for listening to the Watch It Podcast.